Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
One down, hopefully several more to go for the Calgary Flames as they pick up a victory in Game 1 of their Western Conference quarterfinal over the Dallas Stars. Welcome to Hockey Central at noon, everyone. As you've probably already guessed, a bit different today. It's Peter Klein and Logan Gordon with you, the big boss man, taking the week off. Luckily enough, he leaves us with plenty of topics today as the Flames get a win. The Lightning takes them 8 periods, but they get a win over the Columbus Blue Jackets. So we'll have a lot on that. As mentioned, a lot on the Flames. Hilariously enough, there's a game in overtime now, too. So a lot to discuss as the program goes on. As always, want your texts at 960-960. Let's kick this show off the way we do every show, and that is with the color voice of the Calgary Flames, Peter Labardius.
Flames insider Peter Labardius, brought to you by the Gemini Group. Imagine your life, your style. Your home renovation should be a reflection of you. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
Lou, it was just a boring 3-period game instead of 8 yesterday with the Flames and the Dallas Stars. But the result that the Flames wanted, I guess let's just get right into it. What was your main takeaway from a Game 1 win for the Calgary Flames?
Well, I think you really start to show great progress with your team, Peter, as you've heard me discuss. Each and every game, really, if you want to break it down farther, each and every shift, isn't it about dictating to your opponent?
And yeah,
that
absolutely.
to me was the big takeaway and where the Flames have really, really made strides. So again, you know, you can't compare necessarily last playoff to this playoff, but don't you have to in some ways to identify whether a team's getting better as a collective group? And there was no doubt in my mind. So we wondered what it would be like going from one series to the next. You know, we wondered again against what we think is a deeper Dallas team, because they're not injured, especially in the same way as Winnipeg. Could the Flames dictate? And for a team that had struggled even against Winnipeg in the first three games of not scoring first, Peter, there was everything that you could want to like about that first period. That was their best first period of these playoffs. They dictated, and it started with the game's first shift. And who went out? Lucic, Dubé, and, of course, Sam Bennett. And you set the tone, and it's so important with your first shift. And it's even more important, Peter, if you think about it this way. If you are the visiting team, guess who has to submit their lineup first?
That'd be you.
That would be you. So you get to decide who you're going to send out. So you've already said, here's what I'm going to do to your opponent, and now they have to go ahead and match. But the Flames really, I thought, set the table for what they were able to do, because they dictated, it allowed them to jump into a 2-0 lead. And while chasing the game isn't always my favorite statement, it matters. And the more you can dictate to your opponent, whether it's in the matchups, in the matchup game, scoring first, forcing the opponent to go about their business differently than what they had set out, that's what the Calgary Flames did. They dictated in that first period to Dallas and jumped into a 2-0 lead. And then as you flush it out more, well, another real sign of growth is your maturity. Haven't we talked a lot about managing key moments? Well, it was a game that had a chance to get off the rails. You'd done good work. Dallas went to the room, thought they made some adjustments on their own forecheck, and the Flames seemed to get into a bit of a tough scenario in terms of, didn't you find, Peter, there was a bunch of icing calls in the second, and it didn't seem like they were coming out of their own zone with good options for the defense. And Dallas, they deserve credit. And in part, I thought that led to a 2-2 tie and a tough goal, especially the second goal that leads to the 2-2 tie. But Rasmus Anderson, in the second period, the Flames get out of their own zone. They make two or three good plays. He scores, and now it's 3-2. But the details of this team's game, game in and game out, keep getting better. They're defending better. They're managing key moments. But I thought over and above, at least for me, their commitment to the details and their ability to dictate from the onset to their opponent, and I truly believe that's what good teams do, that at least in one game, one period in particular, and we'll get to the third period in a couple of seconds, but I liked a lot of what I saw. Their preparation was excellent, and it did not go unnoticed by the guy running the bench.
You know, I think the commitment level of our guys to playing that way is huge right now. They've got a lot of confidence in each other. I think the biggest thing for us is that they trust that their teammate is going to be in the right position, so it makes it easy for them to just worry about what they have to do. But I thought the key thing for us tonight was just our – I thought we did a good job coming back into the house and protecting the house first. And because of that, we were able to keep a lot of pucks to the outside of the ice. And as a result, we did a better job protecting the slot tonight than probably on other nights that we've seen. But that's a good sign for us, and we hope that it continues.
Love that from the coach, Jeff Ward. And like you said, like just the details and the commitment to those, that's not, again, make the comparisons a lot because it was a real, I think, turning point for a lot of fans. But the difference between last year's playoffs and this year's playoffs, like you said, just that commitment to detail and doing it for 60 minutes, even if things get a little sideways for, in this case, 9 seconds. But even when things get sideways, don't get out of that game plan. I thought they did a great job of that in game one.
Peter, I couldn't agree with you more. And that, again, that was a very mature win yesterday. That might be my favorite adjective. Showed growth. It was a mature win. And this team collectively at this point, and again, this series, trust me, is going to ramp up again tomorrow night. But all you can control is what you do really well. And what they're doing really well right now is working. And the fact of the matter is, who hasn't noticed in hockey circles that it is different? Part of what I think is working for the Flames right now, Peter, in some ways, this is a different Calgary group that other teams are dealing with, and that forces them in a couple of different ways, both physically and mentally, I think. Now it's different for them, too, in how they're going to react. You know, even if I made a comparison, and it's very different long time ago, but didn't the Calgary Flames get a lot done in that 2014-2015 season because they were themselves and they just wouldn't go away, and other teams just, frankly, in some ways, I don't think they respected their abilities. Well, they turned that into a playoff appearance, tons of comeback wins, and a first-round triumph over Vancouver until the rubber hit the road in the Anaheim Ducks. But the steps right now for the Flames, from not everyone in their lineup, not everyone, but the vast majority right now, they're getting a lot of great contributions out of a lot of people. And a lot of people, when you talk about teams, it's, the more players on your team that are doing their jobs incredibly well, there's a lot of guys right now on that Calgary Flames team doing their job at a really, really good level.
Chatting with the color voice of the Calgary Flames, Peter Labardius, here on Hockey Central and Noon, Sportsnet 960 The Fan, coming off of a Flames Game 1 win over the Dallas Stars. I'm Peter Klein, and he is Logan Gordon.
Lou, you mentioned guys stepping up and doing their job. One guy who probably exceeded that and a little bit more last night was Dylan Dubé. A real breakout for him. Could have had a hat trick in the first period if that breakaway goes his way, but it's been trending this way for a long time, and it's nice to see Dylan finally excelling at this level and doing what a lot of people thought he could do?
Logan, what's my favorite C word when I talk about hockey and sports?
Your favorite C word?
Yeah, my favorite C word. How about Mr. Klein? Do you know what my favorite C word is?
I'm going to say commitment or character. Say, character. Character.
I'm going to say confidence.
Confidence.
Oh, confidence.
So,
oh.
I guess I need to start using it more. but good play and success, what does it help with? Confidence. And, you know, Dylan Dubé, a young player, first NHL playoff run, he is gaining confidence. He's more comfortable. And part of what it's all about for young players, and I've said this many times, is it's one thing to find your way into the league. It's another thing. Step two is, now can I impact the game on a night-to-night or day-to-day basis? And now can you do it when it's the most difficult? Well, Dylan Dubé showed me for a long time on his road to the NHL, in Kelowna, in a Memorial Cup, in a Western Hockey League title run, and two World Juniors, including captaining this great country to 2018 gold in Buffalo, this guy doesn't seem to be afraid or lack confidence in big games and on big stages. Now it's the rest of your game. How do you play it really well? How do you defend? How are you physical? But his game has grown leaps and bounds, and it was. You're right, Logan. And Peter, it was a breakout game. And frankly, as these playoffs have gone on, led, I truly believe, not just this line, but in a lot of ways by Milan Lucic and what he's done, who's feeding off of that better than Dylan Dubé? I would say no one. You know, look at what Milan had to do yesterday. So Sam Bennett, take this for what it's worth, has been a terrific player. That line has set a very physical tone, helped this team's physical presence. As a group, they've been way harder to play against, and that group's been front and center. But it's also in the details. Milan Lucic, Sam Bennett hasn't taken a faceoff for two games. And Milan Lucic wins 11 out of 16 yesterday. And extends his point total to 5 to match his all-time career high, and the first Calgary Flame to do that since Jerome McGinley in 2006. Well, Dylan Dubé's got a pretty good mentor in the guy that he calls Dad, and he's listening. But Dylan also realizes that he's equally as important to driving and helping that line. That's what good lines do. You have different components. And everybody, if they can do themselves really well, then what happens? Great things. Sam Bennett, great skater, physical, on the forecheck, makes defensemen nervous. Dylan Dubé, great speed, his offensive game growing, and so is his defensive game. And then who's the guy gluing it all together with all the experience and all the big game experience? And he's won and can manage difficult minutes. I would suggest, guys, that's pretty concrete evidence as to why, at this point, they're not only holding up their end of the bargain, they're helping the Calgary Flames set a different type of standard as a group.
Well, I thought it was really interesting, Lou, when I was listening to the post-game show yesterday, and you guys had Flames assistant coach Ray Edwards on with you, and you know he's been in player development for a lot of his career, and so he's come up with a lot of these guys, and I thought the comment that stuck out for me was that he feels they've got a lot of young guys on this team that aren't afraid of the spotlight, and they want to to have that opportunity to win a game or to have an impact whenever they can, and they don't shy away from it. And I think that as a group, to have multiple guys like that, lots of young guys coming up like that together, is only a good thing for this franchise moving forward.
Logan, and maybe I put too much stock into it, and I'd be the first one to admit that. But one of the things when I assess sports is who gets it done when it's the most difficult. I don't always give the same kind of credence to, and all of it is important. But that's why I said what I said about Dylan Dubé, because I don't think it's a coincidence after a while that you know how to manage hard situations well. And most of the players that do really, really well, it's a combination of a couple of things. Well, you have reps doing it. So anything that we get more reps in should give us a chance to handle it better. But then the real difference is you take those reps and, you know, you guys are both big sports guys. You don't think in, like, let's take baseball. There's some guys that want to go to the plate with the game on the line, and a lot of guys that, and it doesn't mean they're not good players, but it's different. So the more of those guys that Ray Edwards alluded to on your team that, you know, when it gets tough in a tight game or a big game, when you can just kind of make it feel like something that isn't any bigger or that you really look forward to embrace, then you can be successful. And that's why I've always, in looking at sports, put a lot of eggs in those baskets. Because, yes, you need high-end people and you need a lot of everything on a team. But haven't these playoffs shown us that people's ability to execute in hard moments sometimes trump those that we look at as the most talented or skilled individuals?
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, so that's what I think.
Mm-hmm. No, and it really is a great point. And I love how it is all coming together with this group like that. A couple more here with Peter Labardius. Looking forward to game two. Is there a matchup or something that you're looking at as we get a bit deeper into this series?
Well, listen, as every series goes on, and the toughest thing is for coaches and for players is that, you know, you hear from coaches all the time about how do we get better? And you're always asking more of your group. Now, one thing that I found quite interesting yesterday is how Rick Bowness, with last change, and he didn't do it exclusively, but he used the Radic Faxa line with Cogliano and Como against the Sean Monahan line 5-on-5 a lot. Now, if you're the Flames, I guess you can look at that two ways. Are you okay 5-on-5 if you can be checked by that group? I'm not sure you are completely okay with that. But the other side of that is, if you have those players being Monahan, Gaudreau, and Lindholm, and that means that Rick Bowness uses maybe a few more minutes and thus potentially takes more minutes away from other people, can you not benefit that way? I don't know what you guys think, but at a certain point, and that line is, they've done great things. And especially, you know, with Lindholm, you know exactly what you're going to get. He's, to me, the most complete forward on the team. Sean has shown great, great growth. All you need to do is see it in face-offs, his physicalness in his own zone. He's become a way better 200-foot player. But if you're a hard marker, is that group driving enough 5-on-5 play?
Not right now, no.
And potentially, even as this series goes on, will that become more of a factor? Now, again, that's me being a hard marker and maybe too hard a marker. And I'm not saying that they're not doing a good job, because part of their job is to produce in one key area. And you know what that area is? It's the power play. team scored another power play goal again, you know, and that's been a big, big part of their success. But, you know, I thought Jeff and the group did an excellent job as a group dictating to their opponent. Now let's see what happens when the Stars maybe dig in a little more. And let's talk about something else quickly. Was it a dominating type, impactful day for Ben and Seguin? And I would say absolutely not.
No.
So just no, a little, and you have... just a little whatever day this is, Wednesday food for thought.
Yeah, have to assume that that's coming from those guys at some point in this series as well. So it's, yeah, I think this series is far from over. I still think we're getting six or seven out of this one.
Yeah, I agree with you. This baby's already in the trenches, and you might need even different equipment to keep digging.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Quickly, because we are kind of up against it here, but Tampa Bay and Columbus go eight periods yesterday, and now, hilariously, we have another overgame in Toronto. But you've watched this sport for a long time and covered this sport for a long time. That one probably has to rank up there among some of the most memorable games we've seen.
Well, fourth longest in history. But you know what was so impressive? Just the will and the commitment of those two teams. I really, you know, that to me was just incredible to watch that theater. And there really wasn't a ton of drop-off. You think about, you know, Korpisalo sets an all-time save record. You've got, you know, Seth Jones and Werenski playing over 60 minutes. It was just an incredible display of the sport. And, you know, a good Calgary kid named Braden Point scores the winner, and maybe a great way to cap it off. Not the first time he scored a big goal in a big situation either. Been watching it with my own two eyes for a long time. And you know who I want to give a shout out to today? Is Father Grant. And if you've ever spent any time, and I haven't spent a ton, but we've had a number of conversations, he was Braden's minor hockey coach for a long time. He's also helped a lot of other players make it to high levels in the sport. Braden has had some incredible mentorship, coaching, and as good a player as he is, and he is becoming an NHL superstar, he's had some incredible coaching and mentorship to get there.
And it certainly shows when you can come up big in those moments, it always isn't just a one-person thing. There's a lot of work that goes into that for sure. Lou, always fun, sir. We'll chat tomorrow on a game day.
Okay, have a great one, guys. Thanks so much.
Flames insider Peter Loubardias, brought to you by the Gemini Group. Imagine your life, your style. Your home renovation should be a reflection of you. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
So that was a bit on the winning side of the five overtime game. What about the opposition? How do the Columbus Blue Jackets bounce back? We'll find out next here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Well, instead of an outlier, apparently Columbus and Tampa Bay were trendsetters. Welcome back to Hockey Central at noon. Yes, we have a potential for another marathon game today in Toronto as the Bruins and Hurricanes sit in the fourth intermission. Someone who covered the marathon game yesterday joining us now as Allison Lucam from The Athletic is on the line. Allison, thank you for doing this today. How are you?
Well, a little tired, but thank you so much for having me. It's great to be on the show.
Well, it's great to have you. Not many people get to cover an eight-period hockey game. We're all worried about the players' stamina, but how about you? What were you eating? How were you managing eight periods worth of hockey yesterday?
Well, I must admit that my home couch was a bit more comfortable than the seats in most press boxes, so I had that going for me, and obviously water and some snacks supplied by my great husband, but you have to feel for those players. What an effort for more than two and a half games. It was just incredible to see that happen.
Have you ever, I mean, there have only been four games of that length in NHL history, so the obvious answer is probably not, but have you ever covered anything like that before?
I don't think I've ever covered something like that as far as endurance in my life, or even seen anything like that, even a marathon or an Ironman or anything like that. It was just incredible. And when you think about the demands of the game that we all know, not just physical, but also mental, and the time on ice from these guys, I mean, over an hour for two of the Blue Jackets, top pairing defensemen, it's just insane to think they were still able to move and react and play with that much time on the ice.
And Seth Jones setting the record for most time being played in an NHL postseason game. I can now literally say gave it a solid 60 minutes of effort. But just an unbelievable showing from him in this game. Kind of, I don't want to say a breakout performance because a lot of people are aware of Seth Jones, but really showing that he has the potential to be up there among the game's best on the blue line.
100%. I think you really hit on something there. You know, this is something that John Tortorella has talked about to the media and also to his team, is that it's really the playoffs when reputations are made, because it's a bigger stage. There's more focus from the audience. And the way this postseason in particular is constructed, with all of us really watching just one game at a time, all eyes were on him, and deservedly so. Torts was effusive about him last night, effusive about him again today. He really is a key foundational part of this team. And I think what's impressive, people were talking, of course, about the time on ice. But when you look about the matchups against the top line from the Tampa Bay Lightning, and then also second in the on the team in shots on goal with 6, 13 total shot attempts. This isn't just a guy who was out there blocking shots and playing defense. So really rounding out, understanding what he did in that time last night makes it even more impressive to me.
One of the other standouts, and maybe this was a coming out party for this guy, but Jonas Korpisalo breaking Kelly Rudy's record, as Rudy was watching on as a TV analyst here in Canada. But Jonas Korpisalo with a record setting night. And this one might be a coming out party, like I said, for him, someone not quite as well known on the national stage, but a lot of people got very familiar with him last night.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is a player who has lived his entire NHL career up until this year in the shadow of Sergei Bobrovsky, to the point that last year he was literally going back and forth to the AHL to get playing time because Bobrovsky was playing so much and playing well. So for him to come out to play in his first ever NHL playoffs and then put on a performance like that, particularly behind a team where they often talk about the defense in front of him, and rightly so, he, in and of his own individual play, I thought really showed something special, and good for him for earning that recognition, just as much as a player like Seth Jones.
With such a large workload, do we expect maybe a goalie switch for game two just to get the guy a bit of a breather, or are we just riding Korpisalo until the legs fall off?
Yeah, this is a big question for me. I think that were Elvis Merzlikins healthy, I think that would be a big question mark for this coaching staff. But he did injure himself, by all reports, in game 4 of that Toronto series. We don't know any more specifics. Of course, the organization is going just with the unfit to play demarcation that so many organizations are using. So we don't know any more about his status. Korpisalo has been backed up by Matisse Kiveniak, who spent most of his regular season in the AHL, did play a couple games in the NHL, and played all right, but I don't know that he's a player you hand the reins over to in this situation. So I think in a normal situation, we may have seen a goaltender switch, but if Elvis can't go, I think this is just as they're asking all the other skaters on this roster. It's up to Korpisalo to find the fortitude, mental and physical, to be ready for game 2.
You say all the other skaters on the roster, so no lineup changes expected for game 2?
As of right now, no. We did see Nathan Gerby. That 12th forward spot has kind of been a fill-in spot. Emil Bemström has played in that spot in the Toronto series. There's obviously a handful of forwards on the Black Aces squad that could come in. But as of right now, everyone is reported to be healthy, and we assume no lineup changes.
One of the big talking points coming out of the game yesterday, or one of the talking points anyway, was the no-call on Cam Atkinson in the eighth period on a shorthanded breakaway. He gets hauled down by Victor Hedman, no-call on the play. What did you make of that one? It's been pretty hotly debated on social media over the last few hours here.
As my Twitter can attest, absolutely.
Well, I can imagine.
Yeah. You know, when I first saw the play live, it did raise a question for me. And then I think what also raised a question for me is that Seth Jones, who usually steers away from this type of a topic or this kind of a conversation, did raise a question about the officiating on that call specifically in his post-game comments. So I think the question may not necessarily be about that call in and of itself, but it's about the consistency of calls. Seth Jones had a similar call. There's a question of where players' hands were. I understand that. But the night didn't start off great from a Jackets perspective. They completely got wrong a high stick call that luckily the Lightning did not capitalize on in terms of the right thing happening for the wrong reasons. So Columbus, I think, was already sensitive to the officiating, and then to go so long without a call, except for that one that on the face looked not great. I think it's a question of consistency and continuing to make the calls throughout the game versus just that call in of itself. I think it could have gone either way given how the calls had gone earlier in the game, but this is, at least right now, not the hill I'm going to die on.
Yeah, I think... I do believe that there was a penalty there, but I think arguing that a penalty should have been called in the fifth overtime tends to be a bit of a fool's errand. They tend to put the whistles away unless it's obvious, like a puck out of play or something like that.
100%. Totally agree.
So now going into game two, like that is obviously one of the more heartbreaking losses, maybe in the history of the National Hockey League, given all the stakes and everything going into that. What adjustments do you think we see the Blue Jackets make going into game two?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that they had fixed some of the things that were struggling for them in the Toronto series. Their breakout looked a little bit better. They finally got a power play goal this postseason. They had not gotten a single one in the entire series against Toronto. I think for this squad, it's going to be, honestly, as for both teams, honestly, the stamina question. And it may be that Columbus has the slight edge there. I put a tweet up last night of, right before that game-winning goal was scored, they showed the Blue Jackets bench and people were smiling. They were engaged. Pierre-Luc Dubois seemed to be making, you know, a joke and getting his teammates' energy up. So I was shocked at their energy level, and I think that's going to be the key for them. I was impressed with how well the Blue Jackets held to their structure for that long. And I think now what they have to do is hold to that structure and reintroduce more of an aggressive forecheck, because that is how they look to generate offense. They were doing it sporadically last night, but not as much as they need to do, particularly against a team like Tampa Bay.
These two teams obviously have a bit of history going back to last year's postseason and the big upset win for the Columbus Blue Jackets. It is only game one, although we got almost three games worth of hockey out of it. I guess compare and contrast what we saw last year to this year. Was it kind of similar in your mind to how each team attacked the other?
Yeah, I think the biggest changes we see, honestly, is full marks to Tampa. This was a far more physically aggressive team in Tampa Bay than we saw in those playoffs last year. They have talked about that being somewhat of a response of what they learned from that exit last year. I think they looked more aggressive. They do also look more defensively focused. They're clearing out the middle more, particularly that high slot area. That seems to be something that they've identified as very dangerous, that they don't want to allow their opponents to do. So I think they look stronger there. And then the Blue Jackets, their defense looks slightly different. They're protecting those goaltenders a little bit more because they are both in their first year in the NHL. And again, as I just mentioned, offensively, the Jackets need to do more to create even close to the same amount. We know who left in the offseason. So the offense requires a bit more effort. So it's not as easy for them to capitalize, particularly with the players who left, and then also the missing Josh Anderson, who has yet to return from his shoulder surgery in March.
Last one for you, and just a bit more of a wider scope look at the Columbus Blue Jackets. You mentioned players leaving, and it was quite a talented group that exited Columbus last year, and here they are still in the postseason, still hanging with one of the most talented teams in the NHL. What are the expectations for Columbus? Are they just playing with house money based off of how the offseason went? Are there greater expectations after a postseason win last year? Where are the goalposts right now for this Blue Jackets team?
Yeah, I think there's two answers to that. I think that internally, of course, these are all fierce competitors. There are players who are getting later in their careers. A player like Nick Foligno comes to mind, where he knows how few and far between these opportunities to compete for a cup can be. And so, of course, their mindset has to be and is that nothing less than a championship is what they're after. But I think that outside of that room, yes, I think this is an exceed expectations in almost every category. You look at all the reasons that media, that national pundits, so many of us had given for why this team was going to struggle, and they answered every single one: depth, goaltending, returning to structure of play. So I think that while, of course, this team wants to win and wants to go as deep as they can, that this year is going to be looked back on as a success, even should it end in this round, because of what they overcame, not only in terms of talent, but also outside expectations this year.
Allison, this was a lot of fun. Thank you for doing this today, and enjoy periods 9 through 11 and maybe beyond of this series tomorrow.
Thank you so much for having me. This was great.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Thank you very much. Once again, Allison Lucan from The Athletic here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan, brought to you by Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Now open for limited dine-in service with all safety precautions in place. Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar, the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs since 1975 at 6060 Memorial Drive in the Northeast. We will break. We'll get an update on another marathon game in Toronto, how it affects the standard or the schedule, and how hilarious it all is when we come back to Hockey Central at noon here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Welcome back. Just a couple minutes left for Hockey Central at noon here on your Wednesday. 1 o'clock, Will Nault joining the program. We talked about things getting delayed a little bit today. Well, the delays won't be too long as we have a conclusion now between Boston and Carolina.
And the Bruins get it out to center. Pastrnak for Marchand. Pastrnak right into the far side. They score!
Been the center of attention all season long, and for good reasons, and for the postseason for not so good reasons, but the Patrice Bergeron line comes through in a big way.
Mike Milbury getting choked up at the end of that. But yes, the Boston Bruins take a 1-0 series lead over the Carolina Hurricanes with a win in double overtime. I would imagine that means Islanders-Washington won't be happening in 4 minutes, so we'll see how the schedule gets affected going on. But Logo, another wild start to the day out in Toronto. Boston-Carolina, it doesn't go eight, but a big win for the Boston Bruins in game one against a very game Carolina Hurricanes squad.
Yeah, I don't know how do you prepare for a, you know, middle of the day game-ish game yet last night, and then all of a sudden, you know, have to play early this morning? I don't know how that affects anything like that, and then you go into double overtime. But yeah, this is probably the series in the East that a lot of people were looking at, other than Columbus and Tampa Bay, as a tough one. And first game, not easy for either side, despite all the issues with, you know, when they were actually going to play. So interesting to see Boston get the win. I think Boston probably knows their cup window is only so long, with, you know, guys like Chara and Bergeron getting a little bit older in, you know, their NHL careers. So interesting to see. This is a big test for Boston in round one, and I wouldn't want to be an NHL schedule maker right now.
No, there's a lot that goes into it. So with that, our schedule this evening up in the air. We have some plans. Maybe this interrupts them. Who knows? But we'll tell you throughout the day. Either way, we got the Canucks and the Blues at 8:30 tonight. It's just a matter of how off-kilter the Eastern schedule gets with everything going on today. So yes, the next up on the schedule, it is the Islanders taking on Washington, time TBA. You have Arizona taking on Colorado. That one gets going at about 3:30. Then later on tonight, right now scheduled for 6 o'clock our time, it is Montreal taking on Philadelphia. And then scheduled for 8:30 our time tonight, it is Vancouver taking on St. Louis. So we will see how overtimes affect all of those throughout the day. Really have to commend everyone on how well the style or the level of play has been, even going like four overtimes deep. By the time you got to that fifth overtime, that power play looked like two heavyweight boxers who have been beating their brains in for 10 rounds. Just, okay, you know what? Let's both just take this round off. Let's just breathe, center yourself, and let's get back to it. So that was quite the game last night, quite the game to start the day today. Do want to remind you guys again, Tim Hortons Camp Day, with money going towards the Tim Hortons Foundation camps. 100% of the hot coffee and iced coffee sales going to the foundation camps. So pick up a hot coffee or iced coffee today and help support the Tim Hortons Foundation camps. Love this initiative and really, really hope for a big day, even in some trying times. We shall break when we come back. Will Nault joins to chat about the Flames and the Stars from a couple different angles on this one as we head into the big show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.